get started. Welcome along to this morning's session on how we can go and achieve scalable SQL Server design with nothing more than that little bit of plastic that you have sitting in your pocket, your credit card. So folks, I want to take everybody on a little journey today. Over the next hour, I want to walk you through what I've discovered working with customers of all size. This is everything from rural manufacturing facilities all the way through to the largest financial services organisations in Australia. But before we do that, I know from talking to a couple of people, apparently a few people had a couple of drinks last night. So I'm sure everyone's feeling a little bit dusty. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to get everyone in the room just to stand up. We're going to do a little bit of stretching. Get the blood flowing. And for those that are still sitting down, I want you just to point around and just laugh and point at them. So folks, I'm going to get everyone just to stick their hands up in the air. I'm going to put one arm behind the other. Let's put the arms behind and let's shake it all out. And we can do the hokey pokey. I'll get you guys to sit down. So folks, this morning's session, I want to talk to you about a really rude word that starts with C. It's called cloud. No, what? Not that other word. But really, we're actually in a really interesting point in time. We've actually got this convergence that's starting to happen out there. The traditional data center doesn't exist anymore. But what we've now got is we've also got problems that we're trying to solve that we simply just didn't have 10, 15 years ago when we were thinking about traditional design of SQL Server. All of a sudden, a terabyte of data is not a lot of data anymore. In fact, we know some customers that are actually supporting petabytes of data inside of SQL Server. So how do you actually then start to support that? And I want to take you on this journey as we described about how we actually can do that with SQL Server today and how we can do that with actually integrating this whole concept of what's called the cloud. So folks, for those that don't know me, my name is Peter Ward. I'm the Chief Techie Architect and Founder of Wardy IT Solutions. The easiest way to describe me is I'm the Ward in Wardy IT. I'm a SQL Server MVP. I work for Microsoft in the role as a Virtual Technical Specialist, and I'm just an all-round nice guy. And the reason I'm actually an all-round nice guy is, folks, what we're going to do here, if anybody's interested, we've got a few beer mugs and things like that that we're going to give away, some cups, so let's have a little bit of fun with this session. So if there's a question that you want to ask, just shoot your hand up in the air, because the only silly question is the one that's not asked. Because what I want you guys to do is, when you finish with today's session, to be able to go and start to explore some of this technology that we're talking about. It's here, it's now, it's available today. So that's what we want to do in the session. But what are we going to do? Well, we're going to cover three things. And look, guys, I'm a DBA. I still get hot and horny about infrastructure. I like clusters. I like setting up big thumping SANs. I love geo-replication, all that goodness. But all of a sudden, what I've found is that I've actually now got another arrow in my quiver that allows me to solve some of these really complex SQL problems. We're then going to have a look at what this cloud continuum is, introduce the concept of SQL in a cloud, how do we actually take advantage of some of the technology that's available on the Azure stack, and then we're also going to look at how we start to achieve SQL Server elasticity. Because elasticity is not a buzzword anymore. What it is, it's allowing us to actually always increase my footprint, but then decrease my footprint when it's required. And I'll walk you through a couple of real-world scenarios about how we can do that from an elasticity perspective. And TechEd's a great opportunity to describe that, because if we think about what TechEd is, it's an event that happens for 4 days every year. There's a great big investment in infrastructure that we need to scale up for, but then we need to then go and collapse that once we're finished with that. And that's what we're going to describe from an elasticity point of view. Folks, for those that know me, I travel a lot. I'm a platinum flyer on Qantas, I'm a platinum flyer on Virgin. In fact, my address is actually the Qantas Club. But one of the things I like actually doing while I'm away travelling is I like to put the TV on, you know, something in the background, a little bit of noise there. And a couple of weeks ago, I actually had Fox, I think it was Fox Greats on, and all of a sudden I saw the Jaws movie. And there was a great line in Jaws. And all of a sudden, as you know, where the Jaws comes up, leaps onto the back of the boat, and all of a sudden the guy turns around and goes, well, you need to buy a bigger boat. And if we think about traditional scalability, that's what we did in the past. And if you see here, we've bought the bigger boat. In fact, this is the largest cruise ship in the world that you'll see up here at the moment. But one of the problems with that is all of a sudden we get this massive cruise ship and it's pretty darn hard to manage. All of a sudden we don't actually fit anymore inside of the wharf there. We don't have enough tugs to actually move this boat around. And that's the same challenge that we have when we're working with SQL Server at those very, very large scales. Because what I want to sort of focus on is, what did we do in the past from a scalability perspective? Because traditionally, that's exactly what we did. We scaled up. So what is scaling up? Well, scaling up is simply buying a bigger box. But the problem with buying a bigger box is I don't have this concept of easily being able to add compute resources. All of a sudden, if I need a bigger box, I need to throw out the box that I've already got. I can't just go in there and rip a processor out and throw another processor actually in, because the whole concept of the way that we work with servers today doesn't allow that. If I go and buy a 2-proc server, I can't go and turn that 2-proc server into a 4-proc server. And we've got physical limits that we have on the amount of memory that we can actually address on a 2-proc server or even a 4-proc server. But one of the challenges that we have around that is that it's very, very easy for us to engineer, but it's got a very, very high capital cost to put another server in. But the challenge that we also have is that when we put that bigger box in there, it doesn't necessarily scale linearly. So if I go and spend an extra 100 grand, does that mean that I'm going to get necessarily 50% more performance than a box that cost me 50 grand? Of course it doesn't. Because what we've actually got here is a graph that I pulled off the Intel website a couple of days ago. And this is looking at the average cost of servers. If we look at what a 2RU box costs us today versus what it costs us to get an 8-proc box, you can see that it's almost triple the price that we actually have to pay today. So what I've got here is a common 2-processor Xeon 28070. So that's actually the brand new Sandy Bridge architecture that's actually been released. But what you'll see here is I can pick up one for about 14 grand. However, if I scale up to my 8-proc box, all of a sudden it's 150 grand. But the other problem with that is we have maximum memory limits. And you'll see here that even in my 8-proc box, I can only go and address 2,480 gigabytes of memory in there. So I've worked with SQL for a long time. In fact, I was lucky enough to work with one of the great big Unisys ES7000 boxes. So massive 32 physical procs actually in there, can scale up, and it costs about $1.6 million before you put memory in it. So what we want to do is, how do we achieve that exact same scalability that we did inside of that box with what we've got today with Azure? But before we do that, I want to talk about this whole concept of scaling out. Because what is scaling out? Well, scaling out is this concept of federating. So rather than scaling up with our box, we then start to add more boxes inside of our topology. The challenge with that, though, is that our applications inherently aren't actually aware of that. So what that means is we typically then start to shard our database. So all of a sudden we'll go and put customers on one database. We'll go and put orders on another server there. But our application just simply isn't aware of that. We've got some technology inside a SQL Server that allows us to try and address that. Things such as peer-to-peer replication or even just the traditional transactional replication. But it's very, very hard from an application point of view. And that's where we are today. But recently, we actually heard the announcement that all of a sudden, Microsoft has gone and announced what's called the Microsoft Windows Azure Virtual Machine. So all of a sudden, that means that I've got a virtual machine that I can actually address inside of the Microsoft ecosystem there. So I was at the Microsoft Partner Conference last week, and I was actually talking to a lovely lady out of Germany there that works for Microsoft. And they actually spent 2 hours at one of their all-hands meetings working Azure. Azure, how to pronounce it. Azure, whatever you want to call it, it's really here now and it's actually a reality. I don't know about you guys, but I'm, as I said, a bit of a traditional DBA. Now, when I talk to a DBA, the first thing that they typically say to me is no. They're almost like the system administrators of the world. Can I do this? No. Can I do that? No. And the reason that DBAs are so conservative is, if you think about what the role of a DBA is I'm effectively the data custodian for all of the data in the organisation. My primary role in life is protecting that data. So as a result, I start to put all of these roadblocks in place. And I was very much one of these traditionalists around the same thing. It's like, you want to do what with my data? You want to put it where? But really, if we think about what we're doing is, we've actually already moved there. I want you just to think a moment. Just cast your mind back a few years. Think about what your data center looked like a couple of years ago. And really, it was probably down the hallway. You know, you could walk on the basement floor there, you know, put your swipe card in there, all of a sudden there's a data center there. If you think about where we are today, is typically that data center is somewhere else. It's actually being hosted because all of a sudden cooling costs are very expensive. We now need to worry about power costs. So let somebody else actually start to worry about that. But what I want you guys to do is I want you just to take a little moment, maybe write it down and think, what does cloud computing mean to you? Now, folks, does anyone want to share with me what cloud computing means to them? Sorry? Yeah? Anyone else? But folks, if we think about what cloud computing really is, it's simply the use of a computing resource that's delivered via a network to us. So how is cloud computing any different to my traditional data center? I don't know about you guys, but on your ERP system, you don't have somebody physically logged on to the SQL Server box running the application. You've got somebody that's got a workstation or a laptop that's connected somehow by a network connectivity. So that's basically all that cloud computing is delivering these resources over a network. But the key word there is delivering it as a service. So by delivering it as a service, we're actually paying for what we use. And the whole concept of network is very, very important when we think about what cloud is. Because I want you to cast your mind back. We're going to go back to sort of, you know, the dinosaur times, you know. We're living in caves there, not very sophisticated, Neanderthals like me wandering around the world. But what we had to do there is we had this concept of a community, but we were all individuals in that community. If I needed to go and get some water, well, I'd go and put the bucket on my back, I'd walk down to the well, I'd get the water out and bring it back to my family so that they had clean drinking water. We slowly improved that over time. So rather than actually having to go to a well, all of a sudden we've got a network of pipes that runs across the desert there or wherever it is that we're living. So rather than actually having to go to a central well, we would congregate in the middle of a square. So typically if you think about, you know, 1850s England, it's sort of late in the 1800s, rather than actually having to go to the well, the pipes would actually bring the water to a central location. But what we're now doing with pipes is I can simply walk up and turn that tap on and I've got instant access to water. But as soon as I then turn that tap off, the water, I know it's still there. When I need it, I can turn it on and get access to it. And that's exactly what delivering computing resources as a service is it's always there and it's always available for me and I simply pay upon my consumption. So if I'm, for example, I'm going on holidays next week across to Bali, but I'm not going to use any water in my house, so I'm not going to have to pay for that. But when I come back and need to have a shower, I turn it back on and I start to pay for it again. And this is what we're really starting to think about from a SQL Server perspective, is that there's going to be certain times throughout my life cycle of an application that I have peak loads. Now that might be an end of month process, or it might be an end of week batch processing, and I need additional resources at that particular point in time. So I don't necessarily need 8 physical processors all the time. I only address them when I specifically need them, so I can then go and collapse all of those computing resources. But one of the things that's interesting, though, is there's this whole concept of what's called the SQL Azure database. So Windows Azure SQL database, which was previously known as SQL Azure. Quick show of hands, who's heard of SQL Azure before? Okay. So what we're actually talking about today is not actually SQL Azure. SQL Azure is the ability to go and present a database to me. And that's all that I get is just a database that I can address. So my application needs one, here it is. What we're actually talking about today is we're actually going to be talking about Windows Azure SQL databases. So I'm just going to call it SQL Azure, the SQL databases. So what we're really talking about there is all of a sudden I've now got a full VM. So rather than that VM actually being on-premise, or rather than that VM actually being in this private cloud, it's actually now sitting inside of the Azure cloud. So I can spin that VM up and I can install SQL Server directly in that. And it means that I've got full control over that environment. But what's really interesting about that is I can actually add it onto my domain. So I can now actually stretch my domain out both from what I have privately out publicly, but then have full management and full control over that. Now there's a number of differences that we have between the Windows Azure SQL database and our traditional SQL Server. Now one of the things is around about our storage limits. So currently if you run a SQL Azure database, you've got a maximum limit of 150 gigs. We don't have that inside of our VM because what's inside of our VM is basically the box product that we install today. With our authentication, we've got SQL and we've got Windows authentication. And as we know, using Windows authentication is best practice. So by using the VM role, we've got the ability to do that. And there's a number of other things like SQL Server Agent. But the other thing is if you think about SQL Server, SQL Server is a very, very big product. It's not just the database engine. We've got analysis services, integration services, reporting services, master data services, data quality services, Stream Insight, all of these other features that are available inside of the Box product. By hosting it inside of the VM, we have access to all of that that we can use. So it's not just a database. It's the full SQL product there. Now, one of the confusing things is that Microsoft released what they call the VM role. Now, the VM role was a non-persistent disk. So what that basically meant is that as soon as you shut down the VM, everything disappeared. Now, what we've now got with now the Windows Azure VM is we've got the ability to actually keep all of that persistent. So if I stop the VM, I can start it back up again, and I have access to everything. Because what we're talking about is how do we actually go and take what we're doing today with private cloud and stretch that out to the public cloud? Because when we talk about private cloud, we're talking about delivering SQL as a service. So that's the ability for us to have the concept of self-service provisioning. So easily, very easy for us to go and spin up a new instance of SQL Server. And based on a template, it's consistent. But the other key concept around that is also the ability for us to have internal chargeback mechanisms as well. So pay upon use. Because if we think about the way that SQL Server was traditionally procured, we would have a project that would stand up. That project would pay for the SQL license. They'd pay for all of that infrastructure. But the problem was, as soon as that project collapsed and was finished, all of a sudden, who's going to pay for that support? And that's why we've got older versions of SQL that we're running, is because the business is not coming to us and going, let's upgrade SQL, it sounds like a great idea, because they've got no funding for it. Their application, as far as they're concerned, is working perfectly. So by having a chargeback mechanism associated with that, it allows us then to fund that ongoing support. And they pay upon use. And what we're saying is, how do we take that, what we're doing today, and actually move it up inside of the cloud? So how does this all work? Well, one of the things is we've got the concept of what's called a management portal. Now, this management portal is a web-based portal that we can log into, and it allows us to monitor all of our SQL instances that we have outside in the actual cloud. But it allows us to go and have provisioning as well, so we've got the concept of templates. So I can go and take a VM that I've actually built on-prem and push it up into the cloud. Or alternatively, I've got this concept of what's called cloud-ready installation, which means there's pre-built templates available to actually go and spin up SQL Server. I then have a storage account there, and so I only pay upon use. Because if we think about the traditional model, a CIO normally comes to you and says, how much SAN storage space am I going to need in 18 months' time? And what's the response that we typically give? Well, I normally put my finger up in the air and just take a red-hot guess and double it. And what we're doing is we're actually buying it in advance before we're actually needing it. Because the way that we buy hardware today is typically based on a 3-year life cycle. So I make an investment today to try and last me 3 years. All of a sudden I can actually provision storage just like that. So if I need another 100 gigabytes, no problem at all. I don't have to worry about having to provision it. Because what we're trying to do is actually turn all of our cost-based models from being capital expenditure to being operational expenditure. So all of a sudden, I don't need to go and have to get board approval, because I simply go and pull out my credit card and then go and buy that additional storage that I need. Now, I don't know about you guys. I've got a pretty high limit on my credit card, but I'm sure I couldn't put a SAN on my credit card. Folks, let's get it out of the way. I'm surprised no one's stuck their hand up at the moment. There's three questions that I get whenever I talk to a customer about this whole concept of putting data up in the cloud. You know, I'm going to put my data where? And they go, is it secure? What about performance? Because I'm all of a sudden in a VM. And most importantly, what does it cost? So guys, let's drill into these questions. We can get them out of the way, and then we can really focus on the technology. So the first thing, is it secure? Who here is using TDE today? Transparent Data Encryption for SQL Server. Protects all of your data at rest. I'll give you a story about one of our customers. So one of our customers, they've basically got a cage rack sitting in a shared hosting provider. You know, they're actually a financial services organisation. So, you know, they're really serious about protecting all of their data. You know, they wouldn't, you know, financial services organisation, they're only going to put this stuff in the cloud. We've got to really protect it. So they've got the cage and everything like that. Unfortunately, they had a data breach recently. So what was that data breach? Somebody walked into the data centre and pulled the drives directly out of their storage array. So what that meant is they could go and take that database, the MDF and LDF file that was sitting on the disks that they stole, and were able to actually then mount those, and all of a sudden there was around about 12,500 credit card details available. But there was a secure data center, wasn't it? Well, really, if we think about what Microsoft is doing in their data centers, they've basically got every three-letter acronym that you can think about. We've got SOX covered. We've got HIPAA covered. We've got PCI DSS covered. All of these acronyms have actually already got covered from that perspective from an Azure platform. So we need to start to think about that. If we're not protecting our data properly, well, what's not to say that Microsoft isn't? Okay, so we need to start to get over that hump about, oh, I'm going to put my data, we've got data custodian laws, I can't go and have it in Singapore, I can't go and have it overseas. Ask the question, why not? Okay, yes, I agree that there is certain sensitive data that we have regulatory requirements about that we can't push up there, but does that say that we can't go and put part of it up there? Okay, yes, we keep some on-prem, but let's think about what it is that we can then go and start to push up there. So we really are protecting, and it's across a number of different layers that we're protecting. So that's everything from actually what's called the Microsoft Security Framework, from developing the code, all the way through to who can actually access the data centers. So if we think about the traditional data center, we've normally got a swipe card sitting on our belt there that we can actually go and swipe in. You know, get drunk on a Friday night, somebody picks up that swipe card, all of a sudden they've got access to it. So if we think about the data centers that is being provisioned by Microsoft, they're not a traditional data center. They're basically a shipping crate that they're sticking in there that's got a whole heap of compute resources. So nobody actually physically ever enters that crate because it's designed to actually support a number of the nodes inside of that crate to actually effectively fall over, and we don't actually have to have that human intervention anymore. Look, the other thing that we have is, what about performance? Well, what we're talking about is we're talking about a VM role. So what that means is that all of the traditional tools that we have access to, whether that's SQLio, whether that's my dynamic management views, I have full access to all of those. Because the key thing is I need to go and understand my application characteristics. But then I can then go and choose, you know, do I need 2 CPUs, do I need 8 CPUs, what is it that I actually need? And I've got the ability to actually spin those up or spin that down. So a couple of best practices, though, working with customers from an experience point of view, and we'll show this when we actually present a VM, is we have what's called a D drive on there, which is effectively a scratch pad. It's basically like a case drive. So putting things like tempdb on there can actually give us a great amount of performance by doing that. The other thing is to think about disabling some of the write caching features because of the way that SQL Server works from an I.O. perspective. But the same way that we use compression today on-prem, we've also got access to compression. Because if we think about what SQL Server is, it's a database. So of course it's going to be I.O. intensive. We're going to do a lot of reads and a lot of writes. So by actually using page-level encryption, so page-based compression or row-based compression, it allows us to then go and fit more on that 8K chunk. So when I go and do my read and write operations, I reduce them. So we've found that that works really, really effectively when we're actually using SQL inside of a presented VM. So what does it cost? I don't know about you, but that looks pretty darn cheap to me. I can go and get 8 physical procs with 14 gig of memory for 92 cents. I don't know about you guys, but that's pretty darn cheap. So what we're talking about is a product that's not quite in general availability at the moment. It's actually an evaluation process. So you'll see that inside of the preview, it's slightly cheaper. When we move to GA, it's actually going to get a little bit more expensive. So what we're now starting to do is actually pay upon utilization. So for $30,000, you could go and get a lot of compute resources for that with the ability and really start to actually push SQL to its limits. So let's think about data centers over time. Traditionally, when we thought about a data center, we were talking about physical kit. So that was the raw iron. We had physical hardware there. We then moved to this concept of what was called infrastructure as a service. But now we're actually moving towards platform as a service as well. And that's where everything is actually presented for us. It's infrastructure as a service where all the infrastructure is and we put the application sitting on that. Platform as a service where it actually presents everything. But if we think about this concept, is what we've got is we've got a balancing act over high amounts of control and costs. So if we think about the way that we go about procuring a server, if I need to go and procure a server, I go and talk to my CIO, The CIO then goes and signs that off. He goes and takes the paperwork to the procurement department. The procurement department actually go and place an order. And it doesn't matter whether you're 2 letters, 3 letters, or 4 letters for your server vendors. It's going to take about 6 weeks to go and get that bit of kit. So all of a sudden, we've got this lead time that we need to get our physical kit. But there's also that high cost that's associated with it. Yes, we've got lots of flexibility. I can choose what it is I want. But the challenge with that is, if we think about it, is we need to start to think about things as an appliance. Because the more moving parts that we've got, the harder it is for us to diagnose. I've been on many, many support calls where all of a sudden the SAN vendor's going and blaming, you know, the network infrastructure. The network infrastructure guy's blaming the storage guy. And then all of a sudden someone decides to go and blame the hardware. Because typically we've got different vendors for our network stack, our hardware stack. They're all different. And there's a lot of moving parts that need to interweave. So although we've got a lot of flexibility with that, it certainly comes at a cost. But if we start to go and move up the stack, we can actually now start to present virtual machines internally, on-prem or as an infrastructure as a service there. Now, the VM has got a common abstraction layer there. So basically, the network drivers, the balloon drivers that are presented for all of the storage, they're all common across the stack there. But I've still got to pay for that hardware. I've got to pay for the licenses to actually use the technology that I'm putting on there. But if we then move further up the stack, we've then got this whole concept of what's called infrastructure as a service. And infrastructure as a service is really designed around this concept of rapid self-provisioning. And what we're talking specifically there is SQL Server in a Windows Azure VM and how we go about presenting that. And finally, if we think about platform as a service, well, that's the SQL Azure database that we're speaking about. So how do I go about writing SQL in a VM? Well, the best way to do that is let's go and have a look at a demo. So what I'm going to do here is I'm just going to open up the Windows Azure Management Portal here. So when I log into the Windows Azure Management Portal, this is what I'm presented with. So you'll see here that I've actually got 2 virtual machines presented, and I've got 3 storage accounts that I've gone and presented there. So if I go and choose to actually install a new VM, there's a couple of things I can do. So first of all, I simply click on Virtual Machines, and I go and click on New. When I click on New here, I've got the ability to actually create one directly from a gallery option. And you'll see listed here all of the things that I can then go and spin up. In this particular scenario, what I'm going to spin up is I'm going to spin up SQL Server 2012 here. But I can also upload directly from an image that I've created myself. So if I've got a specific template, it's got all of my maintenance plans in there, I want SQL to have this particular service account, I can use all of that ability. And I can present that directly from one of my storage accounts that I have sitting in the cloud there. So if I go and click on my platform images there and I click on SQL Server, I click on Next, I give the virtual machine a name, so let's go and call it TechEd Friday. Just needs to be a unique name there, so it'll actually validate that that's a unique name. I simply give it a password for my administrator account. Again, go and choose what size it is that I want to present for this particular VM. In this case, I'm going to choose my medium. Now, if I go and choose extra small, what do you think my limitation is going to be there? Well, memory. So that means I can only run SQL Server Express on that particular version because it doesn't meet the minimum requirements for the full version of SQL Server there. So in this case, what I'm going to do is I'm going to just select a medium there, click on Next. Now, do I want to actually create as a standalone VM or connect to an existing virtual machine? So in this case, it's going to be standalone. I can choose what storage account I want to go and provision this on or create a brand new storage account. I then go and choose where it is that I want this to be located. Now, at the moment, in our particular part of the world, we've got 2 data centres based out of Southeast Asia. There's one in Singapore, there's one in Hong Kong, but there's also one on the west coast of the US. And what we've found working with customers is depending on who your ISP is depending on how that traffic gets routed through the interwebs. So what we sometimes find is that even being on the west coast of the US, that you get less latency than you do through Southeast Asia, depending on who your provider is. So make sure you go and test that from a network perspective. The other thing to think about too is where is my application going to sit? Is my application also going to go and sit up in Azure? Because obviously we have this latency. So the closer we can get that to our application, then the faster it's going to be for us. So in this case, I'm going to choose the West Coast. We've then got subscription levels. At the moment, it's all pay as you go. So you basically only pay upon consumption. We're going to look at getting things like your mobile phone, so I get unlimited calls for $99. There's going to be similar plans coming out around that that will allow you to actually cap the amount of resources. Because that's one of the things is, well, I don't want to get a bill at the end of the month for $12,000. I want to know exactly what it is that I'm going to pay. So I can then click on Next, give it a DNS name. Okay, availability sets. So when I go and create an availability set, it means I want to group all of these VMs together so that when I fail over, they all get failed over across together. Because what's happening under the covers is we've got this concept of movement where if all of a sudden something fails underneath, seamlessly my entire server will be migrated somewhere else into the Azure data center. So we don't. If you think about what we have today, we've got certainly some technologies around that that allow us to do that on-prem, but this effectively has multiple copies of our VM that we can then seamlessly move them across. And the ability to go and create an availability set allows us to then go and group them together. So let's go and click on Next. I don't know about you guys, but that's the quickest I've ever installed SQL Server. So in about 8 minutes' time, what's going to happen here is I'm going to get my server fully provisioned, SQL Server sitting directly on there. But because you guys don't want to sit around for 8 minutes waiting for this to happen, I'm going to do a bit of the old MasterChef. Here's one we prepared earlier. So what you'll see here is I've got my TechEd AU here. Now when I click on it, I can then go and get all of the diagnostic information about what's happening there from a read and write perspective. But what I specifically want to show you is my DNS name there. So that DNS name that's down in the bottom corner is what I'm going to use to address that. So I can connect from Management Studio sitting in my cube in the office to my SQL Server database that's sitting in the cloud there. So the same way that I manage whether it's in a private data center or whether it's in my own data center, it doesn't change. But the other thing I want to show you is this concept of what's called an endpoint. Because the way that when we provision SQL inside of the VM role is basically all the doors are closed. Everything's locked off. I can't connect to it. I need to make a conscious decision to what it is that I'm going to open up. So by default, SQL Server listens on port 1433, and that's blocked off for me, which means I can't connect. But we've got two levels of security there. We've got that outside perimeter, which is the Windows Azure firewall, but we've then also got the Windows firewall as well. So in order to enable access, I need to make sure that I go and enable that particular port. But the other thing, reason I'm showing you this as well is it also tells us what our public port is for an RDP session. So by default, RDP listens on 3389, but when I go and provision my VM, what happens is I get a randomly assigned port. So I need to use that port in order to RDP. So if I go and get that port number 6492, and I go and get that machine name, I can then go and connect directly back to that. But what I'm going to do here is just come back to my virtual machines, and I'm going to just simply click connect. And that will go and fire up an RDP session for me, and I can connect into SQL here. I've actually typed the password wrong, so we'll wait for it to actually say, put the wrong password in. I'll try that again. And we'll go and connect. While we're waiting for that to, for the magic to happen there, what I'll also show you is that we can also connect directly from Management Studio as well. So if I just connect to my database engine, I then go and specify that and connect. So there you see, in Management Studio, I've connected directly to that server, SQL Server 2012 sitting on there, and I can then go and manage that as if it's just any other database inside of my topology there. So there's one thing I was always told not to do, and that's to go and do live demos with animals, children, and internet connections. So it looks like I've got a bit of a challenge there at the moment, so we'll keep moving. But what I wanted to demonstrate is that I can actually RDP directly in there. I have Management Studio, and it looks and feels exactly as if it was SQL Server that I have there. So one of the other things to be aware of is that when we actually buy software assurance with a product is we get a number of benefits with that. And one of the key benefits that we now get from a SQL Server perspective is what's called license mobility. And that allows me to go and move a license that I'm using today on-premise to actually move that directly up into the cloud. So that allows me to then go and effectively, rather than having to pay for a compute, I can actually go and use that existing SQL license there. So certainly a benefit of having software assurance is provides us that flexibility to do that. So currently today it's an evaluation edition of SQL Server that's sitting up there, and it's sitting on Windows Server 2008 R2. Over time that will obviously be also Windows Server 2012, and you would have seen that we already had that there. But one of the advantages of using the gallery images is they're continually updated. So as a new service pack actually gets released, it will be slipstreamed directly into that gallery. And when we go and provision a new VM, it will then have direct access to that. So how do we go about connecting? Well, we go and use our Windows Remote Desktop to connect. As we said, we need to actually create an endpoint in order to do that. So that's what's called a Windows Azure endpoint. We then go and simply either upload our VHD or provision as we had, open up the Windows firewall, and then also go and open up the Azure firewall as well. So just a couple of things that you need to remember if you're going to load up your own image, and I'll take this from my own personal experience. Make sure you enable RDP before you actually put it up into the cloud. Because obviously we don't have RDP enabled, we've got no way to connect to it. So just a word of warning. So, you know, learn from my mistakes. A couple of other restrictions we've got at the moment is the maximum OS drive size, so the maximum C drives, 127 gig. You know, as being DBAs in the room, we'd all realise that it's best practices to put our data files and log files somewhere other than C program files, Microsoft SQL Server. So as a result, that restriction is really not an issue. But also use a static VHD as well for your operating system drive that we go and present. So if I've got an existing application today, how do I go and get this up there? How do I go and move it from on-premises to actually up in the cloud? Well, there's a number of different ways that we can do that. And I'm going to demonstrate two of the most common ways to do them. One is actually going using what's called the DAC. So I can go and create a DAC pack, which is a packaged version, and migrate that around. But I can also go and present a VHD and actually then take that VHD and present it to my existing connection there. So let's go and give that a shot. So the first thing I'm going to do is I've gone and got a number of databases, and I've gone and chosen that this TechEd DAC database is a great candidate for me to go and push up to SQL Server in my VM. So what I'm going to do here is I'm simply just going to right-click on here, Tasks, and you'll see that I'm going to go and extract the data or export the data to your application. So in this port, I'm going to export the data to your application. And when I export this data to your application, what it's going to do is it's going to create what's called a DAC pack. And that DAC pack allows me to go and migrate this database across to another server here. So what I'm going to do is just go and save that locally. Click on Next, Finish, and what's going to happen is it's going to export the schema and all of that information that allows me to then migrate that around. So it'll just take a couple of seconds for that DAC pack to export. So once I've got that DAC pack exported, I can then go and import it directly in. So what I'm going to do here is I'm just going to flick back here and just have a look to make sure if I can maybe connect it. What have I got here from a VM perspective? Take it out, you running. We'll try connecting to that again. Internet connectivity, which is good. So what I would normally do there is to actually bring that particular DAC pack actually in is I'd simply just go and right-click and import it. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to fire up another version of Management Studio. For those that don't know, Start Run SSMS actually brings up Management Studio. I'm a bit of a shortcut guy, so it saves me a couple of seconds each day when I do that. But I'm just going to connect to my local machine here and demonstrate how we would migrate that DAC pack around. Connect to my local SQL instance, hit connect, So what I would normally do there is I simply just click here and I'd go and import my data tier application. So that allows me to go and take that particular database there and migrate that around. But the other thing that we described is that we could actually also present this as a VHD. So how do we go about presenting this as a VHD? Well, if we're using System Center Virtual Machine Manager, it allows us very easily to do that. But we can also go and create a VHD directly inside of our server as well. So the way that we go and do that is we go and open up what's called Computer Management here. And I'm simply just going to go into Disk Management. And if I go and right-click in Disk Management, I can actually create a VHD inside of my machine. So I click Create VHD, I can then determine where it's going to go. So in this case, I'm going to whack it directly in my TechEd folder here. And we'll call it Demo and save that. Now I'm going to give it a size. Now I'm going to make this really small because what I'm then going to do is I'm going to upload that and I'll show you in real time. So in this case, I'm just going to make it 10 meg. I'll make it 20. VHD, okay. So what that's going to do is it's now going to present as if it's a physical disk for me. So what I'm going to do here is initialize that. Create a new volume. Finish. So all of a sudden I've now got another disk here. So what I can do is I can come into Management Studio. I can grab my backup script that I have here. And that's going to back up that database, the TechEd backup database, directly to that disk. So you'll see now if I go onto it, there's my backup. I can then go and detach that disk, detach the VHD, and happy days. Now I can go out now and go and upload that. Now there's a couple of ways that I can do that. What I can do is I can go and use PowerShell, or alternatively I can go and get the Windows Azure SDK. And inside of that, we've got a tool that's called CS Upload. Now, not about you guys, but I typically don't like having to write batch files that have got 16 lines of parameters that I need to fill in. I'm a simple DBA. So what we've got here is we've got a free utility that's actually called Cloud Explorer. And what Cloud Explorer allows us to do is it allows us to go and connect directly to my Windows Azure storage and then move things around. Very similar to the way that we'd go and use an FTP client here. So there's my storage, there's my VHDs that I've currently got there, and what I can do is I can now go and upload that VHD. So I can go and take that demo VHD and override the existing one that I have there. Okay. So I can then go and overwrite that. So it needs to be a page blob, just something to actually be aware of is when you upload that, that the type that it needs to be is that. Otherwise, it won't allow you to go and address that. So there's my demo VHD. And there you go. We're actually now being able to upload that directly to my cloud storage. So once that VHD is actually in my cloud storage, I can then go and present that VHD directly inside of my VM and then restore that database backup from there. So there's a number of other techniques that we could use. We could go and use the import-export data wizard that we have inside of SSIS. And I'm having all sorts of wonderful fun at the moment with the internet, so you've got to love live demos. So what we walk through there is the two techniques that we've got for uploading directly into. So how do I migrate my existing application from where it is on-prem up into the SQL Azure stack? So let's come back to the Prezo. Okay. So some real-world deployments. Now, we spoke about this whole concept of TechEd and where we want to very easily want to actually ramp up the amount of resources and then we want to go and collapse those resources. And the great example of that is something that we put together for TechEd, which was called TechEd Trends. So what TechEd Trends is designed to do, it's designed to actually look across the Twitter feed that's going on for TechEd and in real time actually provide some analytics around that. So this last year, what do you think was the most popular event on Twitter? Any guesses? Sorry? Yeah, that would be a good guess. No, not quite TechEd. It was actually when Beyonce announced her baby bump. So at that particular point in time, there were 9,000 tweets per second actually going through. So this year, the most popular event was actually the Spice Girls at the closing ceremony of the Olympics. So when they got up on stage, there was a velocity of around about 120,000 tweets per second. So all of a sudden, there's this huge spike in activity around that. So obviously, TechEd is not quite the same scale, and no, I'm not going to announce that I've got a baby bump for you to tweet about either. But what it means is we need to be able to scale that infrastructure up very, very quickly. And what we actually did here is to prove all of this technology is we actually are using a web front end. We're actually using SQL 2012 actually sitting in the cloud in order to actually demonstrate this capability. And just to give you a quick look at what that looks like, in real time we're presenting analytics about what's going on Twitter. So we can go and see who's tweeting the most. We can go and see the latest tweets that we've got there, the number of tweets per hour, and the total tweets per day. Because obviously once TechEd's over, there's no need for this, so we can then go and collapse that directly back down again. And that's a real-world use of how we're using this particular technology. But the other thing I wanted to show you is the fact that we can not only use Windows Azure as something to actually push our applications up to, but we've also got other use cases for it as well. And those use cases are things like the ability for us to go and maybe go and log ship directly somewhere else. So use it as a HA or DR option. So with our always on technology, we can go and use always on to actually maybe use that as one of our tertiary sites. So we synchronously replicate between two sites. We've also got the ability to asynchronously replicate as well using that. So maybe it's not that you're putting your applications on there, but maybe it's got other use cases that you can then go and take advantage of. And what I was going to demonstrate here is the fact that I could actually go and use that Azure database directly as a mirroring target. So I could mirror directly to that. Now what I'm going to do here is I'm actually going to just see whether my other VM actually has come to life here that's been provisioned. We'll just hit a quick refresh. It doesn't look particularly positive there, does it? So what you're seeing here at the moment is actually the brand new portal that we have for working directly with Windows Azure. Not all of the functionality is across there at the moment. So what you sometimes need to do is click on preview and actually go back to the previous portal. So if I go back to the previous portal, this allows me to get a bit more in-depth information. So if I want to be able to go and connect using Cloud Explorer directly to my storage account, one of the things that I need the ability to do is I need to get some security information directly from there. So there's my storage account, and you'll see in my storage account that there's my subscription ID, but if I click on the particular storage, you can see that there's my private access key, and that private access key is then required for me to connect to it. So rather than actually using passwords, we're actually using a higher level of security by actually using these storage access keys, and you'll see that inside of Cloud Explorer when I come here and create a brand new account, that I need to have all of those keys in place in order for me to be able to connect. So, over the last 45 minutes, I've really started to introduce what we can do by actually putting SQL actually up inside of a VM role directly inside of Windows Azure. But some of the key things that we get out of that is it's lower total cost of ownership, or TCO, for our existing apps. And that's because we're only paying for what we use. And what it also means is that we've got a number of pre-canned libraries that we can use, and we don't need to go and worry about updating those. We can automatically have those updated and then redeploy. We've also got full SQL Server capability, so we can use every component, whether that's reporting services or analysis services. Our application will behave the same way that it does on-prem, whether I actually go and put that up into Azure as well. We've also got increased flexibility and control, because one of the things we now got with System Center is not only the ability to actually manage all of our on-prem or our infrastructure as a service environment, but the ability to actually reach out into the cloud and manage all of those SQL Server instances the same way that I do. So I've got access to my dynamic management views, I can connect directly from Management Studio the same way that I normally would, and I can integrate that directly with my own AD. And finally, we've got all of our management infrastructure. So we can use System Center Management Studio for that single pane of glass, and we've also got an SLA around that as well, so 99.9% uptake. 99% uptime. So folks, I hope you've got something out of the last hour or so. Unfortunately, some of those VM demos didn't quite work, but that's always the joy of work with children, animals, and live internet connections. So what I'm actually going to do is actually over the weekend, I'm actually going to walk through those demos again and record them. So if you go to youtube.com/wardyit, I'll have those demos uploaded there so you can actually walk through them and listen to my dulcet tones again. But folks, thank you very much for the session. I hope you got something out of it. Don't forget to fill out your eval forms. And folks, if anybody's got any questions, more than happy to take them. So guys, thank you very much.
So things like bug fixes and all that, can you get those all applied automatically? Or
you not with actually the VM role, but you can do that if you're actually using the...